As citizens across the U.S. cast ballots in the 2014 midterm election, 22 states, most of them controlled by the Republican Party, had passed a variety of laws that made it harder for specific groups of people to vote. The measures included a reduction in the days and hours of early voting, new obstacles placed on absentee ballots, making the registration of new voters more difficult, and imposing restrictive voter ID laws, which in Texas alone were estimated to prevent 600,000 citizens from voting. This avalanche of new voting restrictions followed the Supreme Court's 2013 ruling, which gutted a key section of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. While Republican lawmakers assert new limits on voting rights have been introduced to prevent voter fraud, independent analysis has found no evidence to support their claim. Civil liberties and civil rights groups have long charged that the drive to make voting more difficult disproportionately affects minority voters and is part of a strategy to gain partisan political advantage for the GOP. Laws designed to disenfranchise voters appear to also target college students, low-income voters, senior citizens, and legal immigrants who often vote for Democratic candidates. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with Catherine Culleton Gonzalez, senior attorney and director of voter protection for Advancement Project, a multiracial civil rights organization that works to achieve systemic change on issues of democracy, voting rights, and access to justice. Here she describes some of the restrictive voting laws her group has challenged through litigation and the coordination of community organizing leading up to and following the November 4th election.
I think that the number is about 22, and most of them are in states that used to be covered under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act under the federal preclearance. And so, you know, some prime examples are Texas, where there's actually a very strict unconstitutional voter ID law. That's where the court found intentional discrimination that the Supreme Court ruled could go into place. There's North Carolina, where we're litigating with the North Carolina NAACP. There are a number of measures that will be in place for the first time in this election. So the main things are cuts to early voting and cuts to out-of-precinct voting and cuts to same-day registration. And those are all things that help working people and help people of color quite a bit. And, you know, the state of North Carolina pretty much surgically removed them. So we're still in the middle of litigating that. In Virginia, there's a new photo ID law for the first time. There's photo ID laws in Mississippi and Alabama, also being implemented for the first time since the Supreme Court's decision last year striking down part of the Voting Rights Act. So those are just, you know, some examples. And there are some places where there have been improvements that we're, you know, very happy about, but, you know, quite a lot of attempted discrimination in voting this year.
I'm not sure how our voting culture got set up, but in many countries, Election Day is a holiday, or at least it's on a weekend when people aren't expected to be at work.
You know, our country is one of the few countries where we have a model that you would be, you know, expected to come to the polls on a Tuesday, on a working day, during limited hours. And so, you know, that model's really outdated. People, you know, don't have the kind of luxury of being able to take time off of work. And so weekend voting and early voting and other things have been, you know, really helpful to expand the franchise. And so when you take them away, it's a way of cutting back on things that people of color in particular have used in much greater numbers than, you know, their white counterparts. And also people who are poor have less ability, again, to get to the polls, you know, during a certain time. And we've also found when early voting is cut, it can lead to long lines. In 2012, the cuts to early voting led to exceedingly long lines in Florida. And so, well, people waited up to 18 hours to vote. Many people waited 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, you know, just to vote. And so no matter who you are, that's pretty difficult. And if you're a person who's working two jobs and got child care issues, that's even more difficult.
Is there any evidence that extending voting rights like same-day registration, voting by mail, and these other things actually increase turnout?
There's plenty of evidence that cutting these things, you know, has an impact on ability to vote. And the turnout issue is a really very hard question. In the African American community, people have fought so long and hard for their voting rights. And, you know, they remember Jim Crow. They remember their family members having gone through a lot to vote, or some are still around. you can still have a high turnout. You can still have people having to go through more hoops to vote. And that doesn't necessarily mean there's not discrimination. It just means that people are, you know, really willing to fight for their voting rights. And, you know, that's a broad generalization, but that's actually what we saw in 2012, that African-American turnout increased despite voter suppression. And we said that voter suppression backfired. So sometimes turnout isn't, you know, the only measure of if there's something wrong with our voting system.
What state would you say is the worst violator of voting rights?
It's really hard to tell. The worst one I know right now is actually Texas because, like I said, a federal judge held, and actually it's twice, that their voter ID law was stopped by Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. The Supreme Court took away that federal preclearance under Section 5, and so it was litigated again, and 600,000 registered voters do not have the kind of ID that will be required. And we know that there's a discriminatory impact and that the law was held to be unconstitutionally discriminatory. So, you know, with the rest of them, it's very hard to tell. We know that there's an impact on African-American and Latino voters in Wisconsin and in North Carolina. And the numbers are big, but the biggest numbers I know of right now are with voter ID, and Texas is, you know, the worst case right now. It's the first time in our country's history that I know of that the Supreme Court said it has been adjudicated as unconstitutional and a poll tax and intentionally discriminatory, but they're allowed to do it because it's too close to the election to change things.
After the election, what are your priorities for action leading up to the presidential election in 2016?
I know that in Advancement Project, you know, everyone in the voter protection team is going to get together, and we're in about 8 states this year, and compare notes and, you know, look at the trends and figure out how to stop things before 2016. And I also would just point out that every year is important for voting rights too. So sometimes it's the small elections where these things could arise. And so there'll be, you know, elections in 2015 too. And you know, sometimes these local mayor races or city council races or things along those lines are things that we need to pay attention to, too. But, you know, our eyes are also on 2016, the types of voter suppression that we haven't been able to stop because they were just, you know, invented last year and the legal system's taking too long to stop them. We're going to keep on fighting and we're going to work to stop them before 2016.
That was Catherine Culleton Gonzalez, senior attorney with Advancement Project. Find more analysis of voter suppression tactics being employed nationwide by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.